I have a message from another time. A-Ray Productions Unlimited presents Undocumented Features, Future Imperfect, Symphony of the Sword, Entr'acte, The Courtship of Princess Dessler, by Benjamin D. Hutchins. That would be me. Devlin Carter sat on the edge of a narrow bunk in a small gray room. This was a situation he'd pictured himself in from time to time, usually in particularly paranoid dreams. The primary difference between this reality and his dreams was that the door wasn't locked. At least, he didn't think it was. Although, should he venture into the corridor, he wasn't sure exactly what would happen. He was, after all, a civilian aboard a military vessel, and an alien to boot. He sat back and sighed. What had he been thinking? Letting Amanda convince him to come along on this trip. He was about as welcome on this ship as an atmospheric contaminant outbreak. The captain had led him on board only because Amanda had requested it. He was not in the habit of granting such strange requests when they were made by relatively junior pilot officers, but the fact that this particular relatively junior pilot officer's surname was Dessler made the situation slightly more complicated. And in the end, Captain Dorlach had felt it best to give the Earthman a bunk and keep silent about it. The captain obviously hadn't liked it, though, and the 20-something warrant officer who had directed Devlin to his cabin hadn't liked it much either. He hadn't actually sneered, but he'd come awfully close to it as he told Devlin, "Here is your accommodation, Earthman. For your safety, it is probably best if you do not roam about. You might find yourself in a restricted area and not realize it until the security forces came to chastise you." So here he remained, wondering exactly what was going on. He'd left Earth on a couple of occasions before, but never aboard a warship, Earth's or anybody else's. Unlike on a commercial starliner, there were no announcements to the passengers informing them what the ship was up to. If Devlin's watch had remained accurate, and he had no reason to suppose that it had not, they would have cleared customs by now, and would either be maneuvering to a jump point or queuing for a metaspace gate. As if commanded by his thought, the speaker mounted to the wall, bulkhead, above the door to his small cabin clicked, and a voice he recognized as that of the captain started speaking. Unfortunately, it started speaking Gamelon, not Standard, and the only words of Gamelon which Devlin Carter knew were not very likely to appear in any announcement made by a warship's captain to his crew. Still, context was everything, and Devlin guessed that this was an announcement that the ship was about to go to FTL, however it was going to do it. He sighed, lay down, and felt around for bunk restraints. He didn't find any, which, he hoped, meant that the ship wasn't equipped with a particularly violent drive. All the same, he grabbed hold of the sides of the bunk and held on. If they weren't using a metaspace jump gate, he might be in for a bumpy ride. Another voice, this one rather pleasant and feminine, came on the speaker, said a couple of other things, and then began what was obviously a countdown. Devlin was trying to remember the Gamelon cardinal numbers, but before he could call them to mind, the count apparently reached zero, and there was a momentary plummeting sensation as the lights in the room flickered. And that was all. The captain made another announcement, and then the speaker clicked off. Devlin let go of the bunk edges, sat up, and looked around a bit warily. What had that been? Were they in metaspace? It hadn't felt like a hyperdrive jump. And anyway, a ship as grandiose as the Imperial battleship Destiny's Fist wouldn't use such a slow means of getting a VIP home to Gamelon. Devlin had been considering this for only a moment when the door opened again. Devlin stood up instinctively as another uniformed Gamelon entered the cabin. This one was also young, younger than the warrant who had shown him to his cabin. In fact, she didn't look much older than Devlin himself. She was in her middle teens, shorter than Devlin and a bit stocky. Not fat by any means, but nicely filled out. Like Amanda, and all other Gamelons, for that matter, she had robin's egg blue skin. Unlike Amanda's, her hair was bright red, and cropped short except for an arching fall of bangs that obscured one blue-green eye. She wore the gray and black jumpsuit and low boots of the standard Gamelon space duty uniform, with a blaster and a short, broad sword like a Roman gladius on her belt. The little tag above her breast pocket probably said her name, but Devlin could read Gamelon even less than he could speak it. If the girl's appearance surprised him, her next action surprised him even more. Seeing him, she grinned, squared herself, snapped her heels together, and saluted him crisply, then addressed him in standard. "Mr. Carter, Pilot Officer First Class Kitharina Telaya Dragonar, Icewing Flight 12th Gamelon Space Battle Wing, at your service. Welcome aboard His Imperial Majesty's glorious flagship Destiny's Fist." Devlin instinctively ran his hand over his stiff shock of golden hair, which did nothing but flatten it down and make it spring back up again comically, adjusted his rumpled gray duster coat and t-shirt, which did nothing but rearrange the wrinkles, and cleared his throat, which altered his slightly reedy tenor voice not a bit, as he replied, "Carter Devlin, or Devlin Carter, take your pick." "It don't matter," said Kitharina cheerily. "Yeah, Skyblade warned me about you. She said you'd charm the boots off me if I gave you half a chance." Her grin widened a little bit more as she added, "Now that I've seen how handsome you are, I just might." Devlin swallowed. He said. Pilot Officer Dragonar threw back her head and let fly a bright, full-throated laugh, then jabbed Devlin in the ribs with an elbow and said, "Relax, Carter. Think I want her imperial scariness to eviscerate us both? Anyway, I don't fish that side of the pond, eh, what?" she added in a cheery parody of his Queen's English accent. She elbowed him again, then threw an arm around his neck and scruffled the top of his head rather painfully with a knuckle. "Should I call you Carter or Devlin?" "Well, take your pick, what?" said Devlin, recovering a little of his aplomb in the face of this girl's exuberance. She was the most un-Gamelon Gamelon he'd ever encountered. Not that he'd encountered all that many Gamelons, really, but... "Well, if it's up to me, I like Carter better," she said. "Rolls off the tongue with a certain finesse." She repeated it a couple of times, each time making her enunciation more sultry. "Carter. Carter. Carter." She grinned again. "You can call me Rena, or Sniper if you want to do the call sign thing." "I assume Skyblade is, Princess Dessler, then?" Rena laughed again. "Listen to him," she said to some unseen third party. "Princess Dessler, oh my, aren't we formal?" "Yes, that's her call sign, or that's how it comes out in standard, anyway." She blinked, then glanced at her left wrist, where there was a small chronometer built into the wristband of her flight suit. "Okay, I'm spending too much time on this. Come on, let's go."
"Go? Go where?"
"Flight deck," said Rena, hauling Devlin out into the hallway by the lapels. "Her imperial scariness wants you, and as her flight exec, it's my job to get you. Follow me and try to look like you belong here." She set off at a brisk walk that, despite her short stature, he almost had to trot to keep up with. Officers and crewmen passed. Rena saluted the officers and was saluted by the enlisted without breaking stride for any of them. They gave Devlin odd looks, but since he was with a pilot officer, none of them paused or stopped him to comment.
"What was that announcement right before you turned up?" asked Devlin.
"Oh, that was Captain Doorknob announcing that we just completed Spacefold operations, as if that wasn't blindingly obvious to any trained spacer," said Rena dismissively. "Do yourself a favor, Carter. If you're ever in the military, do everything you can to avoid being posted to a flagship. They got all the stupidest officers and most boring missions. It sounds big and glamorous, but all you end up doing is flying parade escorts, polishing your blaster, and playing with yourself."
Quite, said Devlin.
They walked for perhaps 5 minutes, with Sniper making occasional snide comments about this or that aspect of the ship's operations. Most advanced warship in the fleet, third most powerful main gun in the quadrant, worst coffee in known space. and pausing to salute officers. Devlin noticed that the ship seemed to have a tremendous profusion of officers. He didn't recognize the Gamelon rank insignia, but more than half of the people they encountered in their 5-minute walk to the flight deck wore silver-trimmed jackets and a lot of gold braid. The flight deck, very restricted area, Sniper informed him. Only pilot officers, mechanics, mess attendants, gunnery and ordnance officers, Bureau of Inspection personnel, visiting dignitaries, Imperial news media, and the very, very stupidest sons of nobility allowed. Was a large, mostly open room that smelled of hot metal, cold fuel, and dirty lubricants, spanning the entire width of the ship. The floor featured several large square elevators which carried fighter craft to and from the repair and storage bays below decks. Along the side walls were small bays containing light scout ships, shuttles, and such. As he followed Sniper onto the flight deck, Devlin glanced forward. He guessed it was forward, judging by the way parked ships were facing, and then recoiled in sudden fright, his heart almost stopping in his chest. The forward wall wasn't there. All there was beyond the 100-yard span of deck and ceiling forward was a yawning slash of star-studded blackness, beyond which the ship's sloping foredeck and twin helix cannon turrets could be seen. Devlin stumbled backward, instinctively sucking in a breath. Rena Dragonar turned, looked puzzled, and then burst out laughing.
"Relax, Carter," she said. "There's a climate management field. Keeps the heat and air in and debris out. But our ship's shield generators have a modulator in them that lets them pass through freely. Good stuff."
She clapped him on the shoulder, grabbed a fistful of his coat, and dragged him onward. "Come on." On one of the elevators sat a 2-place Lockheed Lightning IV starfighter. Cutting-edge gear, Rena informed him, less than 6 months in service. Ice Wing, the first flight in the Navy to have them. Connected to a maintenance pack by several steaming hoses. A uniformed pilot was standing next to it, adjusting something inside one of the maintenance panels.
"Okay, boss. One Earthman. Still twitching," said Rena.
The pilot turned, revealing herself to be Amanda. She nodded, unsmiling, and said in a clipped tone, "Get him a flight suit."
"Yes, ma'am,"
said Rena, apparently unconcerned with her commander's cool tone.
"Come on, Carter,"
she said, tugging on Devlin's collar again.
"Locker room's this way."
The locker room was a locker room. They're the same everywhere. Rena led Devlin to one of the lockers without a nameplate, opened it, and then got him out of his clothes and into a flight suit with such brisk, clinical professionalism that he hadn't really grasped what was going on until it was over with. As he stood regarding himself in the mirror, she handed him a small kit bag, which contained the clothes he had arrived wearing.
"Okay, Carter, you're all set," she said, clapping him on the shoulder and then leading him back toward the flight deck.
"Just remember to close your face shield if you lose cabin integrity, because nobody likes sucking vacuum." Devlin's hand strayed to the knob on the side of his helmet. "Quite," he finished with a nervous smile. Rena took him back out to the flight deck. The fighter Amanda had been working on was now idling, the maintenance pack stowed and rolled away. Devlin put his kit bag into the little cargo compartment Rena pointed out, then climbed rather awkwardly up the collapsible ladder on the side of the ship, over the side and into the inline cockpit's rear seat. Amanda, at least he assumed it was Amanda, was up front, already strapped in, visor down, checking over various controls. Sniper leaned over the cockpit combing and helped him sort out the straps, cabled his helmet to the comm system, showed him how to work the intercom system at ejection seat, and advised him not to touch anything else. This he immediately agreed to. Then she grinned, patted Amanda on the shoulder, and jumped down to the deck. There was a clatter and click as she pushed the collapsible ladder into its housing. Then she stepped back, squared herself up, and saluted. The cockpit canopy dropped with a hiss. Devlin swallowed to pop his ears and sat quiet as the fighter rose with a whine of repulsor lifts. There was a soft thump underneath him as the landing gear retracted. "Fighter control, Ice Wing leader requests permission to launch." Amanda's voice crackled in his helmet's built-in earphones.
"Icewing Leader, control," came back a clipped, calm voice. "You are cleared to launch." "Icewing Leader, acknowledge," said Amanda, and the fighter began to move. It gathered speed, the stalls and parked scout ships blurring past, until it leaped out of the bay into open space like a bullet from a rifle barrel. Amanda banked smoothly over the foredecks, turned, and left the great ship behind. Devlin turned to look at it, but warships didn't really impress him all that much, and he was too preoccupied to give it the look it really deserved. They flew for a few minutes in silence, the battleship getting progressively smaller as it cruised in the opposite direction from the speeding fighter. Presently, a click sounded in Devlin's ears, and then Amanda's voice, in a softer, more human tone than she'd used on the flight deck.
"Devlin?"
"Yes?" he replied, then fumbled with the push-to-talk control and repeated it so she could hear him.
"I..."
She paused, but the hiss in his ear told him the channel was still open, and then she continued,
"I apologize for the way you were treated aboard the flagship. I thought Captain Dorlach would have better grace than to make you a virtual prisoner."
The last sentence almost oozed bitterness. Then her voice became apologetic again as she added,
"Perhaps I should not have insisted that you come along after all."
Devlin looked around, back at the dwindling profile of the warship, and then keyed his microphone.
"It's all right," he said. "It's really important to you, this introduction to your father. Right?"
"I... yes. But I misjudged..."
Amanda sighed. "I had no idea Father would send the Fist to pick me up. For Christmas, it was a patrol scout. For fall break, sniper in this very fighter. Something must be going on at home that's made him nervous about my safety. I may have brought you into danger as well as Captain Dorlach's disdain."
"Oh, well, you know me," Devlin said with exaggerated lightness. "Danger? Ha! I laugh at danger."
"This is serious, Devlin," said Amanda, only a little sharply. "I should have tried to gather more information about the situation on Gamelon before bringing you."
"Well..." Devlin fought down his instinctive tendency to try for levity in difficult situations, and replied seriously,
"Well, it's a bit late for that now, what? We'll just have to make the best of it somehow."
Amanda was about to respond, but something beeped insistently for the pilot's attention at that moment, and she clicked off to tend to it. Devlin decided he didn't like the sound of that siren. Tension crept up his back as it wailed on for a moment, and then Amanda's voice returned, taut as a bridge wire.
"We have a problem, Earthman. Hold tight, try to stay calm, and don't distract me with questions."
Devlin knew that tone well enough that he asked not a one, though a veritable flood of questions poured into his mind the instant she told him to withhold them. What kind of problem? How serious? Equipment? Navigation? Fuel? A moment later, a blue-white slash of cannon fire ripped past the nose of the fighter, and Devlin had his answer. He bit his tongue rather than blurt out the disgustingly obvious fact that someone was shooting at them. Amanda was an experienced starfighter pilot. She'd have noticed that already. Acceleration slammed Devlin back into his seat as Amanda threw the Lightning's throttles open. The obedient ship surged forward, exhaust shock cones blurring blue out of the trailing ports of its nacelles. The cannon fire followed them. One salvo splashed off the fighter's aft shields. Devlin looked around, trying to see the enemy, and presently he spotted them. Even for someone as unfamiliar with combat hardware as Devlin Carter, they were unmistakable, their cruciform outline and wingtip thrusters so different from anything else in service right now. Star Furies. The standard starfighter of, among others, the Earth Alliance military, also found quite commonly in the United Federation of Planets Starfleet. Earth Force's recruiting posters featured a Star Fury quite prominently, its plasma cannons blasting a nameless enemy ship carefully obscured by the fireball of its own destruction. Devlin swallowed hard and forced himself not to wonder aloud whether they were under attack by other Earthmen. Instead, he tried to count the attackers, but this was futile. They were maneuvering so violently, and Amanda was doing the same to counter them, that all Devlin could tell for certain was that there were more than 2, and probably fewer than 40. Destiny's Fist, Icewing Leader. Amanda's voice sounded in his ears, clipped and professional, giving only the faintest hint of the stress she was under as she dodged fire. I am under attack by 5 unidentified hostiles. Request assistance. 5? How could she tell there were 5? Devlin supposed that was all part of the training. One of these instruments probably said how many of them there were, but even if they had been labeled in standard, Devlin doubted he'd have been able to read them properly. Icewing Leader, can you identify the type of your attackers? Came the calm voice of the flagship's comm officer. SF-23 Star Fury, E-type, Amanda replied. No markings, no IFF. She slammed the lightning into a sudden sideslip, jinking around a spurt of fire from one of the Star Furies, and then opened up with her craft's twin wingroot blasters. Scarlet pulses of energy strobed across the Star Fury's shields, then tore into one of the X-shaped craft's wingtip thrusters and exploded it. Unbalanced, the Fury began spinning. Rather than press home to a kill, Amanda ignored it, tapping her afterburners briefly in an attempt to escape a box formation the others were preparing for her. Roger, Icewing Leader, said the flagship's comm officer after what seemed to Devlin like an altogether too long pause. Help is on the way. I only hope it reaches us in time, Devlin mused. Amanda was an excellent pilot. Had it been otherwise, she would not have worn a flight leader's wings, even as the eldest daughter of Emperor Deslok I. However, the enemy pilots, whoever they were good too, and the Star Furies, for all their curious shape and oddball maneuver style, were in these numbers adequate to give a lightning a run for its money. The space frame shuddered as a burst of fire raked the starboard wing, making the shields glitter visibly and leaving smoking spots on the ice-blue thermocoat.
If we die, Earthman, Amanda said through gritted teeth, you have my most profound apologies.
Devlin did not reply. Amanda spared him an instant's glance in a small mirror positioned to allow the ship's pilot to do just that. He had his eyes closed, his face composed as if in deep concentration. Praying, perhaps. As the lightning jerked again to the impact of enemy fire, she reflected that this might not be such a bad idea. At the top of a landing tower in central Gamalore, the capital city of Gamelon, Amanda Dessler stood and surveyed the wreckage of what had been a fine, nearly new starfighter. Icewing Flight's Lightning Trainer would never fly again, but it had died with honor, performing every spacecraft's ultimate mission, to get its crew back to the ground safely. Her face grim and slightly lacking in color, she turned on her heel and entered the tower's elevator, disappearing into the lower levels of the building. Left behind on the platform, Devlin turned to Rena Dragonar, whose own battered but reparable lightning was still spooling down in the next landing slot over.
I think, said Devlin, the princess is upset.
Sniper gave him a look, then laughed and pried the wrecked 2-seater's cargo compartment open. I think you're right, she replied as she fished out his kit bag. When Rena and Devlin caught up with her half an hour later, Amanda was still tight-lipped and silent. Whatever she'd had to say, she'd said to someone else, probably at considerable volume. All 3 of them had had an opportunity to shower the sweat of battle out of their hair and put on fresh duty uniforms, or, in Devlin's case, his old clothes. And now they rode an elevated train through the center of Gamalore. Devlin, not wanting to irritate Amanda further by trying to break the silence just yet, sat looking out the windows, taking in his first view of an alien capital. Gamalore didn't look all that different from a city on Earth. It had glassy spires, highways and railways, aircar traffic, and all the other hallmarks of a major modern city. There was nothing Devlin could put his finger on that said, this is an alien place, and yet he knew that it was. Was that just because he was consciously aware that he was on an alien world? Or was there some subtle difference, invisible to his waking eye, that nevertheless tipped off his instincts? One thing he was conscious of was the fact that he was getting a lot of odd looks, being the only pink-skinned person on the train, and in the company of two military officers to boot. No one thought it was particularly odd that the officers were so young. At 15, Amanda and Rena both had 3 years' seniority in the Imperial Navy already. But what were they doing with the off-worlder? Devlin could see the questions running through their heads. Was he a prisoner? A captured spy? Why wasn't he bound? Suppose he was armed. Would the officers protect them? They weren't particularly hostile, or even all that suspicious. Just curious, and a little afraid. Well, that was understandable. We're all afraid of the unknown, right? Devlin remembered vividly his first meeting with Amanda, a year and a half before, on the first day of their freshman year at WPI. He'd had no idea who she was, had failed utterly to be impressed by the name Dessler, and for some reason she had liked that. They had been friends, of a sort, almost immediately, but he hadn't stopped being a bit frightened of her until nearly Christmas. He became aware that Rena was giving him an odd, quirky smile, and realized he was sitting there looking out the window at nothing in particular and grinning. Blinking, he pulled himself back to the present. The train had stopped. Amanda was getting off. Rena gestured for Devlin to come on, and he followed the two out, onto the platform, down the escalator, and up a broad, white-paved boulevard to a grand plaza. No turnstiles. The trains were free. He wondered how they kept the white roads clean, and why there was so little traffic. There were plenty of pedestrians around, uniformed and dressed in civilian clothes that rather looked like uniforms, but the only vehicles he could see around here wore official livery. The dense surface and aerial traffic he'd noted from the train was absent here. The building they were walking to was immense, a square tower of gleaming duralloy and plaster, with four smaller sub-towers at the corners, all sweeping upward in an assemblage of asymptotic curves that made it look even taller than it was. Devlin wondered what it could be. They must be almost in the dead center of the city by now. Something in Devlin's brain made the connection. Center of the city, grandiose building, restricted traffic around it, Amanda was heading for it upon homecoming. What else could it be but Emperor Deslok's palace? They entered the palace's great entrance hall, all chrome and glass. In silence, save for the sharp click of the two armed and armored guards coming to attention at first sight of Amanda. She nodded to them, but didn't speak, and led the way to an elevator on the far wall. Inside, she keyed a sequence of numbers into the keypad rather than speaking, and they traveled for several seconds, up, then sideways, then up again. The doors opened onto a short corridor that led to a single door. Through this door, Amanda marched without hesitation, Rena following, Devlin following her. It hissed softly shut behind them, leaving them in a comfortably appointed, if rather severely decorated, sitting room, complete with white leather and chrome couches, and a window offering a panoramic view of perhaps a quarter of Gamelor. Amanda strode to the middle of the room, stopped, slowly unfastened the collar of her uniform jacket, then turned and whipped it off, leaving herself clad in trousers and black singlet. The explosive motion seemed to unwind a spring that had been cranked up tight inside her somewhere, for with it came a wordless exclamation that seemed to summarize all the tightly controlled emotion she'd been seething with throughout the silent train and elevator ride to this room. Then she threw herself down into one of the couches, and gestured for Rena and Devlin to join her. "I've come home to assassination attempts before," Amanda observed as the others flanked her, Rena with the ease of long association, Devlin with a hint of hesitation. "But never before arriving. She's getting bolder." Devlin was about to ask, "Who?" though he was fairly sure he knew already, when the door chimed. Amanda sighed, got up, and put her jacket back on. Devlin got to his feet as well, and Rena went to answer the door. She waited until Amanda had finished squaring away her uniform. then pressed the activator and stepped aside, just like a butler. In swept a girl a couple of years younger than Amanda, a small, slim figure in a long, pearl-gray gown. She passed Rena, who stood stony and silent, all trace of her usual cheerfulness washed away. Without a glance, glided to the middle of the room and took Amanda's hands in her own, making high-pitched sounds whose tone indicated to Devlin that they were expressions of concern.
"It's very kind of you, sister," Amanda replied in standard, "but as you can see, I'm perfectly all right. It was an amateurish attempt and crude. We were in no real danger."
Devlin thought this was laying it on a bit thick, but held his peace.
"Oh, well, I am relieved to hear that," said the younger girl, switching languages to accommodate her elder sister's whim. "You know I simply hate the thought of anything unfortunate happening to you, dear Amanda. It keeps me awake at night."
"I'm sure," Amanda replied dryly, "but you needn't worry. My enemies are all too clumsy to pose any true threat." The younger Dessler's smile turned ever so slightly cold, her voice ever so slightly hard, as she replied,
"Of course. It's silly of me to worry, but you must grant your little sister her quirks, mustn't you?"
"Of course," Amanda replied. She took her hands out of her sister's, turned slightly to include Devlin, and said, "Sister, I must introduce you to a friend of mine from school, Mr. Devlin Carter of Earth. Devlin, my younger sister, the Princess Xenia Layla Dessler." Devlin swept himself into his very best courtly bow, but as Xenia failed to extend a hand, he didn't follow his usual pattern for such introductions and kiss it. That was just as well. Xenia was giving him the kind of look a person might give another's just-introduced pet dog, if that person didn't particularly like dogs. Polite, vaguely interested, but hoping he didn't come any nearer. Nevertheless, Devlin soldiered on, straightening and saying to her, "Charmed to make your Highness's acquaintance." Xenia didn't pet him on the head and ask him who's a good boy then, but neither did she express herself pleased in return. She simply nodded, gave him a brief smile that didn't reach her eyes, and turned back to Amanda again.
"Well, sister dear, I must be off," she said. "I trust we'll see you at Father's reception dinner tonight."
"Of course," said Amanda lightly. "It is, after all, in my honor."
"Then I'll leave you to your rest. Until tonight."
"Until tonight, dear Xenia," said Amanda, and the younger Dessler turned and swept out, again passing Rena Dragonar without a glance. Rena remained at attention next to the door until it had closed again behind the younger princess. Then she relaxed slightly, made a gesture at the closed door which Devlin figured simply had to be impolite, and uttered a percussive word which brought a hint of a grin to Amanda's lips.
"Indeed," she said, sitting down again and unfastening her collar. "Well, Earthman, that was my loving sister Xenia. You've met her for yourself at last."
Devlin perched himself on the edge of the opposite sofa, elbows on knees.
"Lovely," he said wanly.
"Kit," said Amanda to Sniper, a note of weariness in her voice,
"I must prepare a few things before the reception tonight. Can you see to it that Devlin has appropriate clothing?"
"Sure thing," said the other pilot brightly. "Come on, Carter. You must be hungry, too."
Well, I am rather, but..."
Devlin looked a question at Amanda.
"Go with her, Earthman," said Amanda, "please. Tonight, after the reception..."
She spread her hands.
"It was an impulsive mistake to bring you here, but now that the mistake is made, we must make the best of it. Go. I will see you later."
Devlin hesitated a moment longer, then sighed and followed Rena back to the elevator. "Try not to take it too personally," Rena told Devlin as they emerged from the palace onto the Grand Plaza again. "She's upset at herself, not you." Devlin nodded, looking a little preoccupied.
"I know," he replied. "Still, it's not that I'm upset at her.
I just wish I could help.
You can, Rainer replied. They had reached the elevated railway platform now, and as they stood waiting for a train, she went on, But the best way you can help right now is to stay out of the way. A train arrived while Devlin was thinking that over. They entered and sat down. As it started moving again, he sighed.
Well, he said glumly, that's something I've a good bit of experience in, Walt. Staying out of the way.
Rena sighed, leaning back with her arms folded behind her head.
Carter, when she said bringing you was a mistake, she didn't mean she was sorry to have you around. She meant she was sorry it's going to be such a hassle for you. She didn't think through what coming here at a time like this would mean for you.
Devlin slouched in his seat, his hands plunged deep into his trouser pockets, and closed his eyes, head bowed.
I know, he said.
Rena stretched her body almost straight, holding it taut like the string of a bow, then subsided with a sigh into a matching slouch.
Anyway, said Devlin in a lighter tone a few minutes later, now I know where Amanda gets her kind and loving nature from. She has such a close-knit, caring family, what?
Rena snickered, then punched him in the shoulder. Careful, Carter, she said. You're in danger of sounding like me. Devlin noticed as they moved around the city that, now that he was with only one companion, he felt the stares of the strangers around him quite acutely. Unlike the people on the train on their way here, this group felt faintly hostile, as though if he hadn't been with a uniformed naval officer, some of them might have tried to start something. The thought made him distinctly uneasy. As he and Rena sat in the corner booth of a noodle shop somewhere downtown, he decided to distract himself from the worrisome thought by asking her a question.
So, he began.
Hmm? She inquired.
I don't want to seem like I'm prying, what? But I'm a terribly curious sort of person, and I often find I just can't leave well enough alone.
Rena grinned. Go ahead, ask me anything.
How long have you known Amanda? The way you talk to her, I'm guessing it's been since before you were soldiers.
The redhead gave a short laugh.
Oh, yeah, long before. I've known Amanda Dessler my whole life. You might say she's my reason for living.
Devlin blinked.
Come again?
The Drakenar family have been retainers of the Desslers since before the dynasty, before old Darvok Dessler took the throne in 1640, Rena told him. We have an old family saying, for every Dessler, a Drakenar. One of us is born for every member of the Imperial family. Each of us grows up alongside a Dessler, helping, guiding, guarding. It's what we do. My father guards Desslok, my sister Coromel guards Garen, I guard Amanda. Except Amanda's so damn independent, she won't stand for a proper bodyguard, so I ended up as more of a best pal, first love, wingmate, gopher type of thing, she added with a grin.
Devlin looked thoughtful. So thoughtful he missed part of Rena's list of qualifications entirely.
You're born into servitude? He'd almost said slavery, but decided against it at the last moment.
I guess you'd see it that way, Rena replied, shrugging. We see it as an honor. We're the guardians, the helpmeets, and the confidants of kings. We don't have titles, but no noble house is more honored than the name of Drakenar.
She grinned again. One day, my children will guard yours. Devlin choked on his claw.
I say, he sputtered, coughing. It's a bit early to be saying that, what?
Deny it all you want, said Rena cheerfully. I know the signs. Except for her time at WPI, I've lived alongside Amanda Electra Dessler for my entire life, and hers. I think I ought to be able to tell by now when she's in love.
Devlin reddened a little bit, perhaps not entirely because he had just had a near spit take on a hot beverage.
He said.
Anyway, Rena plowed on. That's why she's gotten you into this mess. She really wants you to meet her family. Well, the part of the family that doesn't suck. And the only way to do that was to bring you here. She wants that enough that she didn't think it through, and now you're here at a bad time. The defense pact with the Volgar is up for renegotiation, and their delegation arrives tomorrow. Her father's going to be so busy the next couple of weeks he may not even notice you're here. He's so busy Xania is getting frisky again. He takes a dim view of his kids trying to kill each other, but he's distracted now. Rena shook her head. Things could get very ugly very fast. I tried to get her to stay on Earth, but she wouldn't hear of it. You know how stubborn she is. Devlin sighed. I do indeed. Well, like she said, all we can do now is try to make the best of it. Come on, and let's get you a decent suit.